This is John Walton, and you're listening to the Power Play Point Podcast with the Blue Liner on point and Anna Knox. Here's Wilson, and on the right side, and he scores!
Welcome once again to the Power Play Point Podcast. This is your host, the Blue Liner on Point, talking to you, the Caps fan in general, live to tape from beautiful downtown Glen Burnie, Maryland. Wherever you be listening from in the DMV, that's the state of Maryland, District of Columbia, and of course, the Commonwealth of Virginia. Speaking of the Commonwealth, with me, as always, of course, live to tape also from beautiful Centerville, Virginia. It's the one and only mermaid, Anna Knox.
Yeah. Happy Sunday. Saturday.
It's Saturday. Sorry to trip you up, but yeah, we got the Dallas game tomorrow. So that was smack in the middle of our time. So tripping things up. It's Saturday. So it's our version of daylight savings time here at the Triple P. So
there you go.
Everybody up.
I just came back from the winery just to be on the show.
Awesome. So that was your whole birthday celebration. How was
it? It was good. I wound up driving. So I'm totally sober for the show. I know we were all concerned about which Anna was going to show up, but no, I'm totally fine. The weather is gorgeous. So you're kind of killing me here when you were like, this show may go an hour or so. I'm like, I may scoot out and enjoy some deck time, but.
We're very organic around here, as you know.
It takes
a life of its own. So we'll try to keep it about an hour, but you know us. Sometimes it goes, you know, a lot like the Caps. We do a lot of overtime. So
true.
Okay, so in honor continuing of Women's History Month, we have a very special guest on this week from the Pucker Up podcast. It is Amy Rothenberger. Amy, how are you doing this evening?
I am wonderful. Thank you both for having me.
Thank you for joining us.
I'm perfectly sort of right smack in the middle of you two, because you're in Glen Burnie, and Anna's in Centerville, and I'm in Silver Spring.
Oh, sweet.
Awesome.
It all works out.
Yeah, most of my... I kind of feel like I'm in a minority here. Most of my Cap fan friends are either in Northern Virginia, Fairfax County, like Anna, or in the Rockville, Silver Spring area, like yourself. So I kind of admit to feeling a little self-conscious when I have to say I'm a little more towards Baltimore, but
I've got a couple of really good friends who are season ticket holders who commute down from Baltimore for every game. So
yikes.
You're not alone.
Okay. Glad to know that. All right. So, we know you have a pretty awesome podcast yourself, the Pucker Up Hockey Show. I hope I didn't butcher that.
No.
Listen to a couple episodes. You ladies are... I gotta say, you do a pretty kick-ass job calling it like it is. Amy, tell us about yourself. First off, how did you get started as a Caps fan?
I'm sort of a lifelong hockey fan, and then when I was transplanted here, kind of had to pick up a new team. So my hockey fandom started in high school because I grew up in New England, and I will show my age a little bit and tell you that my very first NHL game was at the Hartford Civic Center to see the Whalers.
Oh, nice.
And my high school had a hockey team, and a lot of my friends played on the hockey team. So I would go to our outdoor rink where we could get ice to watch high school hockey growing up. And then came down to Maryland to go to college and went to Hood College, which then was a women's college. Happy Women's History Month. It is no longer. And decided that by then, by the time I was done, the Whalers were pretty defunct. And then I was like, well, the Capitals are here. Might as well become a Capitals fan. And I didn't become a season ticket holder until probably about 10 years ago. Would go to the occasional games every once in a while, and of course, always watch them on television. But kind of grew up around hockey. Even my family, my extended family is from Pennsylvania, and my uncle was always a Flyers fan. Is still a Flyers fan, so was always surrounded by hockey and hockey fandom growing up. So this is just a continuation. I just finally found the right team.
Awesome. Awesome to hear. And you're also a New Englander. So my wife, Mrs. Blue Liner, is probably going to want to chat with you later on. That's where she got her start there in North Dakota also. That's awesome to hear. What do you think of the team overall this year, given their ups and downs recently?
Well, I think it's interesting. You know, there's a couple of things going on here. We're old. But then again, this is all sort of my eye test and opinion, but I'm seeing sometimes out of necessity, but sometimes not, a lot more usage of the youngsters. I'm glad we just signed Joe Snively to a one-way deal, which says to me that once he is healthy, he's going to stick around in the NHL.
Great.
Which, you know, hasn't always been the case with some of our decent call-ups from Hershey. They tend not to stick around for a while. And again, this year, we've seen so many call-ups from Hershey get their very first NHL goals, and a lot of that was, you know, out of necessity at the beginning between COVID and injuries and all sorts of stuff. I still think, you know, we've iced our optimal lineup, you know, less times than I can count on both my hands this season. And considering that, I'm not at all disappointed. The one place, and I don't know, you've listened, Gil, to my podcast. You might know that a little bit more than most, but my heart lies in goaltending. And right now, I love me some Vitek Vanacek, and I don't know what we're going to do about Ilya Samsonov.
That's been, of course, a bone of contention because, well, with every Caps fan, pretty much. But just to very, very quickly rehash that, in my mind, at this moment, I think by now, we should all be, I don't want to say resigned to the fact, because I love V squared myself. I always kind of favored him ever so slightly over Sammy because his fundamentals were much, much better in my eye. You disagree?
No, that's my opinion as well.
Okay. Just want to make sure I didn't mishear you.
Yeah, no.
Okay. But anyway, Anna and I said it last week. There's no doubt in our minds that Vanacek is now the de facto number one, bar none. Samsonov right now can be called upon, looks like, based on what we've seen in the last 2 weeks anyway, for spot duty. But if you give him more than that, I'm not sure if he can carry the load. That might be a maturity thing. We'll find out later on if they decide to go forward with him. But I think the goalie debate, quote unquote, you can't see it, but I'm doing air quotes with my fingers, is over because Vanacek has made it his net. So I don't think there is a goalie controversy or debate at this time. Now, trade deadline's coming up. They may want to go after a veteran goalie. You know, that's their business. I'm still of the opinion they shouldn't. Waste of money, waste of time, waste of development. But again, we'll see. But in my eyes, the debate's over. Vanacek has taken over the net. It's his to lose.
I would agree with that there. And I would also, kind of to piggyback on what you just said, agree with what we should do as a trade deadline in terms of goaltending, I think, in my very humble opinion, we have Zach Vitale, who can be a black ace in the playoffs if we need him.
Shutouts, hell yeah.
I would not have a problem with that whatsoever.
Me either. And there's something about his vibe I love. Love, yeah, love, love. I like him and Vaynerchuk.
Yeah, he's been doing so well down in Hershey. And, let's keep this whole development of, you know, our AHL players rolling. And, yeah, call him up as a black ace for the playoffs.
Yep.
I think with the veteran – and I'm going to use my bunny ear air quotes now, Gil – with the veterans that are available at the trade deadline, I don't think quality-wise, Vitale's much different. And if not, he's probably leaning towards the better side than most of what's available from the veterans that are available. And frankly, this whole Fleury talk makes me very angry. Ugh. And I think, in terms of, you know, you were talking about fundamentals and stuff and what you appreciated about VTech. I appreciate that too. And in terms of goaltending style, I see more of Sammy in Fleury and always have, i.e. they make great saves because they're out of position and they have to.
Yes, no, exactly, exactly. So, yeah, so to sum that up, yes, even though you've already done it, just to rehash it, yes, Vaynerchuk has better fundamentals because he knows the game as far as positioning. Samsonov is more reactionary, so his saves look great. They get tacked onto the ESPN highlight reel because they don't know what real hockey is. but yeah, don't get me started on them. But yeah, I mean, they're both great in their own way, and I think they will become even better because they're both young. So that has always been my opinion as far as don't get a veteran goalie to stunt that development. And I really would like to see them stay that course, but I would also not be surprised if they decided to go out and get a veteran goalie to be that mentor that we've been talking about for the last few weeks that, you know, certainly couldn't hurt. Okay, so last question personally for you, Amy, and we ask this of just about everybody when I can bother to remember. What do you do for the almighty paycheck?
I'm sort of on my third career right now. I started off as a high school English teacher. I then moved into the health insurance arena, and I did that for about 20 years. And now I am working as an implementation specialist for a software company.
Oh, good Lord. The streak is started again. And in fact, I think you could change my name for yours. And that's pretty much my biography. And also, I don't know if you knew, but Anna's also a teacher.
Yes.
Is now. She's a special education teacher.
I taught 10th grade English.
Oh, nice.
Out of
school. Yep, I have fourth grade. Oh boy. And
I tell you what, elementary school teachers, especially special ed teachers, have my full respect.
Thank you. Let's just say yesterday was a moment of me praying to every entity possible to say, my God, please let me win some kind of lottery because there is a full moon. The kids are out of control. My students, particularly who have behavioral issues and stuff, were out of control. And we're almost at spring break. I was teetering on the, oh my God. And then, yeah, you know what? And then today's weather was gorgeous and being outside. And so that was fantastic. But yes, I appreciate that you saying that. But yeah, I think all the sped teachers were like, you ready to go? I'm ready to go. Let's find another job.
Well, and this is the time of year I always remember fondly, I'm using my bunny ear quote, with the 10th and 11th graders. Can we have class outside?
Yeah. Yeah. And for elementary, it's like, can we have extra recess? Like all day. Like, you can on Saturday and Sunday. Go at it. You know, like I wish I could, because there's a part of me that's like, yes, I need you outside. Go take that energy and you just go do you. But we've got, you know, 700 kids that also want the same thing. But yeah, very funny that, yeah, when the weather's like this, it's we just want more recess.
Yeah, I can relate. And, you know, I telework, thank God. But yeah, I too am on something of a third career. I also started out as a teacher, so obviously there's a kinship there. But yeah, I can also relate to the whole out of control thing. Yeah, those are the people that call me and don't know how to turn on their computer. And yeah, that's what I go through, and probably not nearly as frustrating. But you probably dealt with more of the mature side of people, Anna, frankly, now that I think about it.
Yeah, I think that we have swap stories, and I'm like, you know, that could be one of my students' parents calling you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
<something.
laughs> Okay, well, Amy, again, yep, Amy, again, great to have you on. So going to love, I'm sure, hearing your take on the action on the ice this week. So let's go ahead and get right into it.
All right.
So first game this week was against the Islanders. This was a Tuesday night game, and first of all three, thank God, all three victories. They're really coming back here. Great to see. But this game was a lot tougher than I thought it would be. I guess you should learn by now to not underestimate a Barry Trotz coach team. But I think too many people looked at the standings and thought, okay, easy 2 points. Well, not to be, because this was a nice back and forth game. Checking out the scoring summary, Anthony Mantha with his fourth on a wrister, Kuznetsov and Sherry on the assist on that one. Kind of wondering how he ended up with that line, because he was actually slated to start the second line, I thought, but I guess this really doesn't matter. So he stakes them to a 1-0 lead. Brock Nelson ties it in the second period, jumping into the second period, ties it 1-1, 4:55 into the second. Kyle Palmieri puts them up 13 minutes later, 12 minutes later at 17:02 in the second. Caps were kind of sitting back a little bit, I thought, here, unnecessarily. So the flow of the game was definitely with the Islanders. And then it kind of took a turn for the better. Axel Jonsson. No, I am committed to saying this gentleman's name right. God is my witness. So give me a second here. Axel Jonsson Fjällby. There you go. And if anybody who follows our Facebook page knows, I couldn't even type the poor guy's name. So I'm committed to saying it correctly. So Axel Jonsson Fjällby again. We're committed to precision here at the Triple P. Thank you very much. With his first Eva as an NHLer, Dmitry Orlov with a sweet assist on this one, literally walked around Anders Lee, deked him out of his jock, and then ever so effortlessly slides it over to Fjällby, who had, I want to say, 12 square feet, not a whole 24 square feet of wide open net to shoot at, but parks it in the back of the net, ties the game, and that was one where you jump out of your chair, because this is one of the younger guys. We talked about the younger guys earlier, Amy. This is one of them that I want to succeed. He's, in my mind, he's marked as Carl Hagelin's replacement, because, as I said a few weeks ago, I'm getting a really bad end-of-career vibe, because an eye injury ain't nothing to fool around with.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I hate saying that, but right now I see him as Carl Hagelin's replacement. I think he's doing very well on that so-called fourth line with Nick Dowd and Gernot Hathaway. And he proved himself.
I love that he has Carl Hagelin's speed and then some, and better hands than Carl Hagelin. So I think that's an upgrade altogether.
Yeah. He's also got his hair too.
Fabulous hair.
You can't, I mean, you can't, it's hockey. You can't discount the hockey hair.
It's true. And, you know, the social media has just picked up on the fact that the guys are loving his hair, too. I don't know if you all have seen what's come out in the past couple of days. I think there was one maybe this morning or last night, too, of him standing in the fan and letting his hair blow while the guys in the tunnel were going, woo!
I missed that, but yeah, I'd love to see that myself. Okay, so on we go with the scoring summary. So that tied it, and then it's a back-and-forth battle, very spirited towards the end, and then who should come up with the go-ahead goal at the time at 15:02, but El Capitano himself, Alex Ovechkin, with his 37th of the year, Kuznetsov on the assist, nice little snapshot right off the face-off. And just as Joby and Locker described it, all hands, no legs, for the for placing him third all-time past Jaromir Jagr in the goal-scoring leadership category. And this was, if the AJF goal didn't bring you out of your seat, this should have. I really, really wish I was at Cap 1 for this, because that place turned more electric than Whiskey's Lasso in Kingsman Secret Service.
Having been there, Gil, let me tell you that I hadn't heard it that loud since the playoff run in 2018.
Nice.
Like, sweet.
It was amazing to be there. And yeah, as a person of size, I rarely pop up out of my seat quickly at a game. I did for that goal.
Hell yeah.
I can't describe how great it was. And I'm glad it happened right before they went on two road games. I was going to be so upset if it wouldn't happen at home.
Yeah, he tried really hard to bring it up to it on the Western Canada road trip. But a part of me was glad he didn't get that, and that he did, he did nail it at home. And you saw the rewards. It was just, everybody was brought out of their chair. It was just an absolutely awesome atmosphere. I really wish I was there. And it's a cliche, but yeah, they raised the roof, and it was a sight to see. You had Slapshot flipping the counter, and you know, everybody screaming and waving the signs. It was just one of those moments where, even with all the bad in your personal life or an up and down season, you look back and say, you know, thank God I'm a Caps fan. So that's just, sorry. That's just my take on all of it. 'Cause I haven't had exactly the best of weeks, but off my soapbox now. So, okay. So anyway, that we thought at the time was going to be the game winner. Well, not to be, unfortunately. So 3 minutes later, Islanders pull their goalie, and that son of a bitch pest Anders Lee sneaks into high slot and slips it past Vanecek to tie the game with less than 2 minutes to play. And yeah, I didn't want to say I got that sinking feeling, but it was punching the old gonads, because I was really thinking that would be a fitting end to the game and we'd walk away with the win, but again, not to be. So on comes overtime, and very spirited showing by our Caps for the overtime. I think they pretty much ran the whole possession game for most, if not all, of the 5 minutes. 7 shots on goal in the 5 minute period alone.
And boy, isn't that a turnaround from overtime earlier in the season?
Hell yes. I don't know what Gatorade these guys drank between now and then, but the overtime play has improved 10,000%. And yeah.
Granted, the bar was very low, but still.
Well, even so, you look at the standings counter, and there's what, 10 overtime losses that are in the old counter. And that's, you know, you take even 2, 3, 4 of them, you swing them the other way, and a little bit different story to the season. But, you know, real good to see, though, however you have it, that they're coming out on the right side of, you know, putting out the effort and getting the result at the same time. So great to see. Now, Varlamov, of course, was the difference, at least in the extra five. But thankfully not in the old skills competition. And my hatred of the shootout has been well documented here, so I'm not going to go over the details. This one, oh, God. This one was an eight-rounder. I say again, this shootout was an eight-rounder, eight rounds of two guys at a time shooting. And Anthony Mantha finally, who opened the scoring, fittingly enough, ends the scoring with a wrister. Anders Lee lined up, and Vanacek was equal to the test. Love the little celebration at the end, by the way.
Yes, that was awesome. Can I ask a possibly unanswerable question, Gil?
Shoot.
Might that shootout have gone less than eight rounds if perhaps some of the shooters that Laviolette put out there didn't consist of Trevor Van Riemsdyk and John Carlson?
Oh.
Brian to Anthony Mantha?
Carlson has seen shootout duty before, if memory serves, and he does not have a bad shot. What he also does not have is moves towards the net. He also does not have skating ability that is better than a baby deer.
Oh, I love it.
So that's kind of a detriment, but he's got a pretty decent shot from the point, that is. So I can see putting him out there. But, yeah, no, I can't stand the shootout, so I can't speak to strategy. But, yeah, bit of a head-scratcher in putting out a guy like a Van Riemsdyk or something like that. And yeah, maybe you wanted a Mantha earlier, but
any number of forwards, including Anthony Mantha, who ended up winning it. But I digress.
True, and that's one of the reasons why I hate it. It's because it's so non-organic to hockey. It's so arbitrary sometimes. It's one guy and one goalie. It just doesn't seem natural to me. I'm not one of these, you know, for lack of a better phrase, ultra conservative types that Unga Bunga, me Tarzan, you Jane. I'm not that kind of purist, is what I'm trying to say. But
sure,
I see the shootout, and it's like, okay, maybe that works in international competition, but to decide any professional game, no. Yeah. Sorry, I'm not with it. I've beaten this argument to death. I don't like it.
It'll never last that long, and the game will be over.
True. True enough. I'd much rather they decide it 3-on-3, 4-on-4, however they do it, but not like this. But anyway, Mantha puts it away, thank God, in the eighth round and finishes it. So the Caps come away with the 2 points. Great for them. So that was the last game, or is the last game for them for a little while anyway, at Cap 1. Then they go back out on the road, since they just came from the road. Why not? I still say the schedule maker is on some sort of recreational drug that they should be arrested for, but that's just me. On St. Paddy's Day, Thursday evening, they go into the unfriendly confines of Nationwide Arena in the city of Columbus, Ohio, against the Blue Jackets. And once again, so before I get into this, I don't want to spend too much time on this game, because this game was weirder than I don't know.
I've been here already.
Well, insert John Walter's movie here title, and it was weirder than that. It's a Baltimore thing. But yeah, this thing had a whole lot of weird, goofy shit happened in it, and I honestly stopped paying attention about halfway through the third period. But real quickly, we'll go over the scoring summary. So Mantha opened the scoring with not one but two goals. TJ Oshie, I'm going to say TJ Oshie assisted on both of them, although officially it was only the one. Backhander in the first, 429 the first, and officially unassisted for his sixth. 12-20 in the first, but I guess the score sheet should read Mantha with the goal, and the stanchion in the Nationwide Arena, and TJ Oshie, and the back of Jonas Korpisalo's leg on the assists. That's how the score sheet should read. And you knew then that it was going to be, or I got an inkling anyway, that it was going to be a really, 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 really strange game. And then it wasn't, I don't know if it was the same, I want to say it was the same period, but Ovechkin would eventually score, but there was also, they kind of had to, didn't they have to stop the game because he took a shot and it cracked the glass?
Yes, they had to replace it.
Yeah, right. And it was, I don't know if it's in the first or second period, but yeah, they had, you had that stopping the game. So you had a little bit of this action.
Safe flight repair, safe flight replace.
I don't know. What was in the Gatorade that night, but it was something funky going on. Like you said, Anna, maybe the full moon was hitting that place. So it was kind of strange, but we roll on. Second period, Martin Ferravari, his fifth, Sprong and Carlson on the assists for that one. I know I've been dumping on Carlson, but that was his 40th assist on the season. So, you know, look, he still has worth. I just want him traded while he still has worth so we can actually get something back for him. And
we're on the same page there, Gil.
A team would be willing to take that $8 million contract that is still an albatross around their neck. But no, it's not like Carlson doesn't have worth. He helps to run the power play. He slows the game down. Boy, does he slow the game down. But sometimes you need the game slowed down. But yeah, he's I'm gonna do a bit of a reference to your last episode here, Amy. So again, gonna give the Pucker Up podcast some love here. I think you fielded a question towards the end, something about goal songs and something about you guys were making fun of Carlson's goal song should be "Slow Ride" by Foghat.
Yes.
I thought that was better than my guess, which is "Back That Thing Up" by Juvenile.
Ouch.
That would be my goal song for Carlson. Because he does that stupid slingshot every time, and I want to reach through the screen and strangle him. And so when he does back that thing up, I do want to back my thing up in his face and tell him, what the hell are you doing? Sorry, getting out a lot of frustration here, but damn, it feels good. But speaking of defensemen who score, it's pretty good to see Ferravari to get on the board. Another assessment here. Look, I hope anyone out there isn't disappointed with his goal total and say, well, why isn't he getting more? He's on a line with Carlson. Isn't that what he's supposed to be doing? No. What he's supposed to be doing is what he's been doing most of the year, watching Carlson's back when his slow ass doesn't get out of the zone fast enough and cover the rush going the other way. That's his job.
Yeah.
So
you don't play defense to score goals.
Right. And so,
why, you know, I have such a problem with the Norris Trophy.
Oh.
And its description. It should go to the best offensive defenseman because that's what it's been doing.
Right. Ever since the late 80s, it's been the Art Ross Trophy for defensemen, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And you notice history lesson here. I'm pretty sure the both of you will know what I'm talking about. But history lesson here: the last quote unquote purely defensive defenseman to win the Norris Trophy, the Caps own Rod Langway, 84 and 85.
Yeah.
Or I think it was 83 and 84, actually, now that I think about it. But yeah, he won it back-to-back years. And ever since then, yeah, guys who move the puck, guys who get 70 to 100 points a year. So yeah, you are exactly dead on with that, Amy. It is the Norris Trophy has become that and not much else. But it's a shame because if you read the description of the award, it says awarded to the player adjudged to be the best all-around defenseman in the NHL. all around. That means that means if you're a defenseman and you stand around like a human pylon and let a guy go around you and get a goal against you, that does not qualify you to be among the best in playing defense. But what do I know? I've only been watching hockey for 40 years of my life. So,
yeah.
Anyway, okay. So I'm just going to kind of blitz through the rest of the scoring summary here, because not long after Ferravari's goal, which turned out to be the winner, it became a laugher. Oliver Bjorkstrand, way underrated player, by the way, in my eyes. It's his 22nd of the year for the Jackets. Voracek and Max Domi. You guys hear about the rumor that the Caps were going after Max Domi?
Yeah, no, please make that not be true.
I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you, but go ahead with your take, because I have mixed feelings about it, but go ahead.
I think he may have some skill that could be useful to the team, but I also think he's locker room poison, and I think a lot of how this team runs is how they love each other. I know it sounds corny, but I don't think Max Domi would make for a good addition to that locker room necessarily.
Anna, does that sound right to you? You and I have had discussions on how the locker room runs.
100%. Because I think it's all about how it's aside from skill and how you are on the ice, it is the chemistry with the other players. So I agree. I think he'd be toxic.
Yeah, I'm of two minds of something like that. He definitely has the skill, although I think his skill level has kind of eroded because I don't know what it was, and I don't think his father actually encouraged it, but he decided to try and emulate his father a little bit more. And if you're listening and don't know what I'm talking about, his father is ex Maple Leafs enforcer Ty Domi. Some of our older listeners might be familiar with that name. And so I don't know. So his game is kind of spiraled downward a little bit, but he does have that playmaking skill. This is his 23rd assist on the year. That ain't too bad, but in the end, no, I think the both of you are right. He would be too toxic. He would be locker room cancer. We've got a great locker room. We've got a great bunch of guys in here. I don't think he would be a good addition to the team at all. I don't think his attitude is much changed since Montreal. He was with Montreal. So I think he's picked up just a lot, just way too many bad habits. And it's a shame because, you know, I want to root for a fellow diabetic, but he's just not going to be what this team needs. And going the other way, I don't know who you'd give up anyway, because, there's no cap room, but that's another bone of contention for discussion for another podcast for another day and time.
There's $2.5 million of Carl Hagelin's money.
Well, that's true. That is true. But that's funny though. The last I checked, cap friendly, which was about a week ago, they still said it was something like $185,000. So I may not have checked it recently, but yeah, I don't have they officially put Hagelin on LTIR?
I think they have. I'm gonna let my fingers do the walking. You can.
I would think they have. And while you're checking that, Amy, let me know what you find. But we're going to finish out the scoring summary. So Ovechkin gets another one here, his 38th, Sherry and Wilson on the assists. Yet another power play goal. Power play's managed to turn itself around, not doing the hokey pokey. So that's good. Patrick Laine tried to make it close, beginning of the third period, making it 4-2. So this was another example of the weirdness. Connor McMichael scored his eighth, officially unassisted. I think this also slid, or...
No, this was the one that the,
that was the own goal off of their defense.
Okay, so right. So Amy, you and Mrs. Blue Liner at the same time corrected me. Yeah, it was more or less an own goal that was credited to McMichael. Okay, so let weirdness rule, and it certainly did for this game. And then the Caps just ran away with it. I don't want these to be afterthoughts because I love seeing these guys score, but Sherry with his 16th, TVR and Backstrom, that was an empty. Here's another weird one. The coach decided to pull the goalie when they got a power play. We're talking 7:20 in the third. 7 minutes into the third, they get a power play, and then they decide to pull a goalie. So Sherry scores an empty netter, and then they get a power play 2 minutes later because Nutsoff buries it, Backstrom and Ovechkin on the assist on that one. So, yeah, this one, I'm not even going to bother to go over the stats because I think the Caps were pumped and ready to play this game, and the Jackets weren't. And that was really that was really the difference. The one thing I liked seeing was that well, you never like seeing a goalie get beat up, but I finally got to see a game, a full game with the Caps winning and beating Elvis. Elvis got pulled into the building. He didn't leave the building, but you know, sorry, bad joke. Anyway.
Just to get back to you on my research here.
Okay.
We currently have 3.5 mil on the long-term injured reserve list, according to Cap Friendly, between Carl Hagelin and Joe Snively.
Ah, okay. All right. So there is some decent amount of wiggle room. Okay. Well, that that just made things, that made the trade deadline on Monday a thousand times more interesting. So, yeah.
Even though Joe Brian McClellan said that he wasn't going to be very active, and I just refuse to believe anything that publicly comes out of the GM's mouth about what they're going to do at the trade deadline.
Not very active, yeah. Says the sniper waiting in the weeds. Yeah, I believe it when I see it or don't see it. Okay, so on we go to what was my favorite game of the week last night, down to PNC Arena in Carolina against the Hurricanes. And this game, I didn't have it marked as a loss. I would not have been surprised if the Caps lost this game. I love their effort, and even with what all went on, but I love the effort. And I figured as long as they brought that and played their toughest, which they did, then that would have been fine with me because they'd already had two wins in the books for the week. And I don't care what anybody says. I think the Jackets are done. I don't see them catching the Capitals at all.
No.
I said a few weeks ago, need to be hotter than the fires of hell and damnation. They need to be hotter than that. And, that team doesn't have it. So anyway, to get to the scoring summary, Seth Jarvis, probably the only player I actually like on the Hurricanes, opened the scoring summary, scoring with his ninth, 5-17 in the first. Kuznetsov unassisted ties it barely a minute and a half later, making it 1-1 unassisted. And then that guy we've talked about a few times, John Carlson, his 11th, McMichael and Hathaway on the assists on that one, bringing them up 2-1. So that ended the first. Vincent Trocheck, 7:06 in the second, ties it 2-2. Seth Jarvis pulls them ahead, and somewhere along the way here, somewhere between then and now, was the Daniel Sprong goal. And I posted a tweet that said, quote unquote, here we go with the air quotes again, review of Sprong's goal kind of seemed phoned in, ha ha ha, as in they took all of, I don't know, half of a coffee break to figure it out. And this is what bothers the shit out of me, out of the review system. Sometimes they take 10, 15 minutes. They talk to Toronto. Hey, how you doing? Oh, we're looking in the screen, eh? And we're talking about the Caps, and we want to call the goal back, eh? Just give me a minute, eh? Give me some time to finish my Tim Hortons. So, sorry, I just did a disservice. I love Canadians. I really do. And sometimes you get this where it's like, why did they even bother? And I don't know that they even had an angle where they could slow it down and see the puck actually not cross the goal line. And, you know, Alan May probably broke it down the best since, you know, he has the wherewithal and time to watch the replay 15 times like he said he did. And it was something like post crossbar or crossbar post and therefore never cross the line. But I don't know. I can't stand – if you're going to stop the game and get it right, then stop the game and at least try to get it right. But
or at least give the illusion that you're trying to get it.
I didn't want to say that, but yeah, thank you for saying what I was thinking, Amy. So yeah, either try or give the illusion that you're trying. But yeah, I thought that was, you know, another kick to the old gonads there, and I thought the Caps kind of a little bit let that affect them a little bit, because that period is where they kind of lost the flow of the play. They wasn't a minimalization of effort, but they just kind of just, I don't know. It looked like the momentum had been lost and they weren't doing enough to get it back. But they finally did get it back in the third. And the captain, bless his heart, on the power play, 14:56 in, ties the game. And yeah, I'm not going to go into diatribe about Carolina's fan base, but yeah, this wasn't the game winner, of course. The game winner would come in the dreaded shootout, which, again, I'm not going to waste time with. Long story short, third round, he puts the backhand shelf in and ends it after the overtime, which is another weird one. Caps actually had a power play in that but couldn't convert. But yeah, so but Ovechkin puts away the backhand shelf in his round and wins
that
the game.
Shelly was beautiful.
Oh hell yeah!
But with the booze.
The booze when he was skating in, and then when he put it away, the hand to the ear. Yeah, when he was the whole let me hear you shut up, because I saw a tweet that said yeah, all 6,000 of the Carolina fans that actually showed up. And if you saw the crowd, you'll know what I mean. We're booing him.
Oh, yeah. There were a ton of Cap fans there.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, they're trying to show their loyalty to their team. And, yeah, they got pretty quiet after that puck crossed the line when he backhanded it in. So, nice 2 points there. You know, like I said, I would have been happy with a loser point. Or even a tough game, a good effort, and they lose by one or two. As much as I hate myself for saying that, but of course we got even better. Now we talked about the goalies. This is what I'm talking about when I say he's good in spot duty. Ilya Samsonov had himself a hell of a game.
He did.
You have to say that.
Yeah,
100%.
The man only faced 20 shots, and he stopped 17. But he also stood tall in the shootout, and a lot of the shots and scoring chances were of the high-danger type, point-blank chances. And he kept them in it when he had to, in that kind of low part where the momentum got away from them. And that's what a goalie does. And he's starting to rise his level. He's bringing up his game level as well. Maybe not as much as Vanecek has or continues to do so, but he's bringing up everything to his A game too.
An observation that I've made over the season with him, and I agree with everything you've said thus far, Gil. I think some of it, and is going back to what you said earlier in the pod, has to do with his maturity. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it has to do with what's between his ears. And I say that because There was a stretch there for a while, especially when VTech was out hurt, where you could pretty much count on him letting in a goal sometime within the first 5 minutes of the game. And when that happens, it never gets better from there. If he can manage to make his way through a solid first period, you'll usually see a solid Ilya Samsonov. That's my observation.
I totally agree. So, Anna, with your coach's eye, how much you coach youth swimming.
Yeah.
I don't know how it works out if they have, you know, different heats or races or anything like that, but how much is a good, from your coach's point of view, how much is a good start beneficial or differential even to
Absolutely.
Someone in that mindset? Can you kind of expand on that?
Of course. It's huge. It's huge because, you know, it happens, then it becomes a mental game. And if you're mentally in the right frame of mind, which I will say we all saw what happened with Braden Holtby. You know, he's in a good mindset. He was a Holt beast, and not so much. People were, you know, ready to trade him. But it is all about that, getting out there, you know, feeling confident, playing smart hockey, regardless of your position. But there's so much of it, I feel, that is mental, that, yeah, you go out there and you have a good game that you just, in your mindset, everything just kind of tends to relax a little bit, and you're not making careless mistakes because you're thinking, yeah, okay, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be. It's exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. This is, you know, and for swimming, this is the event I'm supposed to be in. Versus if, you know, you're stressing about if I don't win this game, the what ifs, you know, kind of thing. So I think, yeah, it's a huge thing. And I think that there is something that other guests, and Gil, you and I have talked about this, there's something different about the Caps when they come on the ice when VTech's in between the pipes. And it just usually, you know, I'm not going to say a more relaxed, but we just seem to see a team that has their head in the game that much more. Not that anyone's, you know, not going to play hard because Sammy's between the pipes, but it's like there is something different about the vibe of the team with VTech. And a lot of that just has to do with, you know, confidence and going in and not being, not second guessing, you know, their positions.
Absolutely. And to tie everything up in a nice, neat little bow, I think that will come more into Samsonov's game. This is why I'm not ready to give up on him as he matures even more. Now, some would say the presence of a veteran goalie might help that along, but at the same time, you can also learn that on your own through experience.
Right. Well, and I think that aside from, you know, from the coaching staff at the Capitals, I think that Sammy's been quite humbled by the fans as well, because I think that we saw all this potential when he came in and had so many high hopes and he was great. And then there was just these kind of fuck ups with, you know, the COVID, and it's like, oh, okay, he gets good. Then he gets it twice, and then there's something else. And it's like, all right, that's where that maturity is not quite there. The skill there, 100%. We saw, you know, last night, and that's fantastic. And everyone wants to see that. But I think what more importantly for fans, they want to see the consistency with him. And I don't doubt it'll be there. I mean, I think we stick with Vanacek and Sammy. I'm all on board. I like, you know, the whole like bring a vet. Yes, I don't know. I mean, it's like, yes, it would be great. You'd be like, oh, they're going to mentor. But I think at this point, these two guys challenge each other. They both have skill, but they're also going to have to get in the right mindset. And I feel like, unfortunately, Sammy just has to prove more. Which I'm like, great, as an athlete, you've got people who are pushing back and saying, hey, listen, you know, fan base is like, meh, you know, you need to prove it to us. As an athlete, you'd be like, fuck yeah, let's go. Like, I'm going to prove it to you guys. And that's, you know, a great motivating factor. So we'll see what happens. But I just think he has to prove more to the fans than anything at this point.
Oh yeah, he's got a ways to go, but I think he's realized by now that he has to stay on that path.
He's got to be consistent.
Yeah, he's trending up, as they say.
I agree.
He's got a ways to go if he wants to work himself into contention of being number one. But
exactly.
Again, I think right now what we have is a number one and a clear backup.
Yep.
Right now, with Vanacek, who can do the regular 50-60% of the duties, and then Samsonov filling in like every 2-3-4 games or whatever it is. So mm-hmm. I think they're both in a good place, and that's great to see. So that was the week that was on the ice. Run through quick previews of coming attractions before we get to our last segment here. Okay, so of course tomorrow evening back at Cap One. Next game is against Dallas, the Stars. It's 5 o'clock puck drop. And then second of the two-game homestand is on that Tuesday, 7 o'clock puck drop against the St. Louis Blues, after which by then we'll know what the rest of the lineup will be because the trade deadline is in between those 2 days on Monday. I was kind of hoping to get a swing a special episode for that, but it didn't work out. I didn't get the folks that I wanted on there. So we'll be discussing that a little more on next week's episode, what went down and what didn't, and how it may or may not change the team. And then later on in the week, they get 2 days off, and then they go up north to Buffalo against the Sabres for a 7 o'clock game. And then quickly back again to Cap One against the Devils, 7 o'clock that Saturday night. And that rounds out that next week. So going to be kind of an interesting week. So you're middle of the road, a lot of middle of the roaders, one and two teams that aren't doing so well. That game against St. Louis is probably going to be the one to watch because they've been on a bit of a tear recently.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the game to keep your eye on if you don't catch all four. So, okay. So, again, as we said at the beginning of the episode, it is still Women's History Month. We have a very special guest on who happens to be part of her own podcast. So as we like to find out here, celebrating that, Amy, what is your take on the the women's professional game overall? Are you a fan, and what do you think has to be done to kind of take that to the next level?
I am a fan. I love watching women play hockey. I love watching Olympic women's hockey. I love that there is a growing professional women's game in the U.S. and Canada. I would like it to grow more. I think what's currently going on between the PWHPA or PHWPA, I never get that right, whichever way it goes, and what used to be the NWHL, which is now what, the PHF?
Yes. Premier Hockey Federation.
I think those are two things that can peacefully coexist. I think it's really interesting that all of a sudden, now that they both have found some decent monetary backing, decent enough to provide higher salaries and benefits for their players, which hasn't been done previously, that all of a sudden Gary Bettman and the NHL are interested in talking to both of those factions and mm-hmm. Seeing what they could do to bring them together, I guess. I will give a shout out to another podcast with which you may or may not be familiar, you and Anna, the Steve Dangle podcast, where they were talking about this earlier in the week. And I couldn't come up with a better analogy than what I heard on that show, which is, you know, and their take too was, you know, it's really interesting that the NHL, who didn't want to have anything to do with them monetarily or otherwise until, hey, we've noticed that you pretty much have a good following and are finally getting some financial backing. Now we're interested. The analogy they used was, hey, let me kick the tires on this car that I'm going to buy and tell you I invented.
Nice.
Yeah, I would agree with everything except for the point where I don't like the fact that there is this split, that there is the division between the established organized league and the split off, the PWHPA. I hate this word, but I kind of feel like this is what I'm doing. I don't want to mansplain this, but I kind of feel like I have to explain the difference because obviously not enough people pay attention. But the difference, if you're not paying attention, you should. But the difference between these two is you have an established organized league that is built from the grassroots ground up. The used to be NWHL, now the PHF. And then you have a group of about 150 or so, and these are the creme de la creme, by the way, of the best players in the world, not man or woman, I'm going to say. And they decided the league, organized league, wasn't doing enough to create a decent working environment, a decent environment for the game to grow. And they formed this own faction and they're backed by sponsors. But to me, it's the old saying, a house divided can't stand. I think they should work out a way to come together and push forward as one. That's the only thing I don't like. But like you said, Amy, the fact that there's this new money coming in from all these different sponsors to both factions, and it's allowing them to grow and, more importantly, giving them a competitive wage, a living wage, so that they can play the game that they love as their sole profession. They don't have to shuttle off to a second job to make a living. So that is, you know. But the fact that the league is as the Steve, you know, you got from the Steve Dangle podcast, which I have heard of and I do admire, that's a pretty damn good analogy, because why they don't get behind this, I'll never know. It can only grow the game further. It can only grow the league. It can only grow the game further. It can't be a bad thing. In no way can this be a bad thing. Why they're dragging their feet on this, I don't know.
There's a part of me that kind of hopes they grow without the help of the NHL. And I think it's the part of me that's a woman who sees that these leagues are also run by women. And to have, you know, Gary Bettman and all of the various hockey men say,
true,
hey, let us show you how to run a league.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I totally get that, because They built it. They built it from the ground up. It's theirs. And to have somebody take over and say, oh no, do it this way. Yeah, I totally get that.
And the other thing is, I appreciate your point about wanting them to kind of coalesce, but I also think of things like the Premier League in soccer. You know, just because there are multiple professional leagues doesn't mean that, you know, they can't coexist. There are several different professional leagues in soccer. They're all playing professional soccer. And they all have great fan bases. And I've heard, you know, talk in the past about, wouldn't it be neat if they did that with hockey? Well, in women's hockey, they kind of are right now.
Yeah, so why not? I think the women's game is great. I think you have, and as I just said, a lot of the players in either faction, either league, are the best in the world, regardless of gender. Now, Kendall Coyne Schofield, probably one of the best.
Sure.
is the name that keeps coming to my mind. Allie Thunstrom. I've seen her every time I see her play. She dominates at both ends of the ice. She plays for the Minnesota Whitecaps in the PHF. Mm-hmm. I am always mesmerized, and that's not hyperbole. That's not an overstatement. I'm always mesmerized by the women's game because, as I always say, it's pure. Yes, to an extent, the physical element is taken out of it, but not as much as you'd think.
That's right.
Especially when it's Canada versus USA for the gold medal. watch one of those and don't tell me there ain't some hate there.
Yeah.
But I want their game to progress and I want it to be on their terms. I want the NHL to back them in whatever way they can. But no, you're right. I don't think they should be taking over that because they built it. It belongs to them. So I can see that in that if they don't want or need the NHL's help, I hope they succeed regardless. So, last question. So we're going to speak to you as a fan. Have any, what would you say your treatment has been all your years as a fan? Do you get, even now, when we're supposed to be even more enlightened, do you get the guy with the beer in his hand that says, "What the hell are you doing here, talking about the game? You don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're saying." You still get any of that?
I don't, but mainly because I'm the one that doles out the information that they're wrong about. Like, if I have no problem with, when I hear guys sitting behind me trying to mansplain the hockey to their girlfriends, correcting them when they're wrong, and they don't give me any guff for it because they know I'm right. I hand out a lot of well actually to men at hockey games, and I enjoy every single minute of it. I would say the only time I felt like I might have been a target for fellow fan hatred was not at Capital One. It was at Wells Fargo Arena right before the pandemic. I went with one of my cousins who is a Flyers fan. I went to Flyers Caps game with him there. And I don't think I would have done this had I not been with my older, bigger male cousin. But Tom Wilson had scored a goal, and it was his 20th of the season, that particular season. And I stood up in my Capitalist jersey and yelled, "That's 20 goals scorer, Tom Wilson, to you," and pointed to everybody and sat back down. And
you got interest here because we're Tom Wilson fans here for sure.
And it made me feel kind of invincible. And I will tell you that, I did not get any guff from anybody. And in fact, when the game was over and I got up, one of the guys that was sitting behind us tapped me on the shoulder and he said, "I didn't think it was going to be a good time sitting behind you, but you've got my respect over the course of this game." I am as a fan, I yell things a lot, and a lot of them are good things, and a lot of them are bad things, depending on who I'm yelling at and why. I yell at John Carlson a lot. Please know that my voice echoes throughout Capital One Arena. Phrases often during the power play where I yell to John Carlson, "You had one job!" When, he lets the puck go through over the blue line at the point. Things like that. You may have heard, depending on what episodes you've listened to of my podcast, I do have the Sidney Crosby alternative chirps too, which helps endear me to even the Pittsburgh fans because I sit on the end where the opposing team shoots twice. So I often sit amongst an unfriendly crowd. And, you know, I got sick a long time ago of, you know, the old and tired and possibly not politically correct references to Crosby as Cindy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I saw a sign a couple weeks ago that said Cindy Crosby sits when he pees. I'm like, okay, first of all, that's really misogynistic. Second of all, kind of transphobic too. Let's just put that away.
Yeah, that's too much. That's definitely going over the line.
With the Sidney Crosby Alternative Church, and I yell these whenever he happens to be on the ice at Capital One Arena. And things like Sidney Crosby swims in the shallow end. Sidney Crosby sleeps with a nightlight. Sidney Crosby always buys the extended warranty. Sidney Crosby pours his milk before his cereal. Sidney Crosby clips his toenails in public. All things that could very well be true. But also are just general bad things. Much like Sidney Crosby. I mean, Sidney Crosby, good at hockey, probably one of my most hated hockey players. He can be both.
Yeah. No, I totally get what you're saying. If you're gonna chirp, you gotta have, as I always say, you gotta have game. Don't go down the road of, like you said, being transphobic or misogynistic. Don't resort to that. Now, if you got game, then you'll come up with the chirps and the insults that will, you know, resonate and win the crowd over. But if you got to go down that road, then you don't have game. You might as well just keep your eyes on it and not say anything.
And I've had the same seat neighbors as a season ticket holder for the last 5 or 6 years. They always get so excited when it's a Pittsburgh game. They're like, are you ready? You have your list? But yeah, I think doing things like that, A, it makes the game a really good experience for me. It usually makes the people in my general vicinity a little more laid back. And I usually don't get any guff from guys because I think they know I know better.
That's good. That's good that you do get that respect. I mean, I wish I could say that it's all of the time that happens. I'd be a fool if I thought that or said that, because I know it's not. But no, that's good that on the whole that's your experience. But you know,
I mean, I'm sure there has been some, but not in any recent, you know, time that I can remember. And you know, the fact that I sit with a lot of people that I know. It probably makes my experience a little bit different from the average woman who goes to a hockey game.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, and most of, you know, my co-host Julie is not only a woman, but a queer woman. And so she does a lot of yelling too. We don't sit together at the games. She's also a season ticket holder.
Right.
She's actually on the opposite side of the arena from me. And she gets some guff every once in a while, but again, she knows of what she speaks. And so, and she's not afraid to do that. What I really think could change a little bit from the standpoint of being a female fan is, the gear they make available for women. I'm using my little bunny quotes again for women. You know, is all sort of like, I think getting better, but I think when I started, especially spending time at the arena, it was lots of like, I like my men on ice shirts that are all in the teeny tiny sizes that women should be.
Well, like, I think that, not to cut you off, but I think that comes with the economics of it. And I think hopefully over time, that will get a lot better once, you know, the opportunities and the recognition that the pro game on the women's side gets. So hated to jump in there, Amy, but we're actually running out of time here. So, sure. I just, real quick, plug the podcast and, we got to jump. So,
okay. Pucker Up Podcast. It is at Pucker Up Podcast on Twitter. It is puckeruphockey.com is our website. And through that website, you can join our Discord, and our Discord is a wonderful place where we all hang out and talk about not only hockey, but we got a lot of K-pop fans in there. We do movie nights and online game nights through our Discord and all sorts of fun stuff. And the podcast is available wherever you listen to them.
Nice. Nice. All right. Great to hear. Okay. So great having you on, Amy. Thanks again for coming on with us. So for Amy Rothenberger and the Mermaid Anna Knox, thanks for listening. You out there in the earbuds, the other side of the earbuds, the speakers, what have you. This is the Blue Liner on Point signing off and reminding you that when you have all of your mother's sisters gather at a funeral to avenge your death, it's called vigilantes. Insert chirping cricket sound here. Mm-hmm. Usually I get a loud groan or on a rare occasion a laugh, but I was hoping that would resonate.
I was going to laugh, but I didn't know whether you wanted me to or not.
You're allowed to do whatever you want once the mic, once it's on. So, okay. All right. Hallelujah. And let's go, Caps.
This has been another episode of the Power Play Point Podcast. All episodes are available from Apple Podcasts, the Podbean app, blueliner77.podbean.com, and now available from Stitcher. Music by Joe McAllister, voiceover by Jeffrey Conklin.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Power Play Point Podcast. Thanks for listening.